This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 317, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 317. I am Josh Flanagan.
And I'm Ron Richards.
I'm Connor Kilpatrick.
You'll never know what we're laughing about, but it's funny. iFanboy.com is our website that we started and maintained until it came to fruition. It's about comic books. We like them. We read them. We talk about them. It's almost all we do. And every week we read a bunch of them. One of us has the job of picking the one that they like best. They call that the Pick of the Week. A review goes up on Wednesday, and we talk about it on the podcast along with the other books from the week and stuff that's going on. Before we get going, we are going to talk about what happens in this book as if you were looking at a picture of it and you said, oh, that tells me what happened. We're going to do that. So there's spoilers, and if you don't like that, then come back after you've read it, and then everything's kosher, dude. you know, it'd be fine. Ron, you had to pick this week. There was no doubt.
Well, it's funny because it's last week we lamented it was a very average week and all that stuff. And this week I just got walloped. And not only did I get walloped, I got like 30 books. And not only did I got walloped with a lot of really good books.
Yeah, I had 27 books and they were mostly really good.
And many of them were written by Jason Aaron.
Yes. There were four or five of them.
I had tweeted early in the day as I was reading my books. I go, can we just accept that Jason Aaron won comics this week? And we're going to get into that in a little later. But the pick of the week did end up going to the no-brainer pick for if you know anything about me and us and iFanboy in general, whatever. But The Shade, number four, written by James Robinson with art by Darwin Cook. And
art is not a strong enough word.
Right, exactly. Well, so what it is that you know, we've over the past couple of years, we have praised James Robinson's work on Starman. We love the Starman omnibuses that recently were released by DC Comics and revisited that great series from the 90s, and then the Blackest Night Starman issue came out. We raved about that and how great it was, and when the news of James Robinson doing a Shade miniseries, which is a character for those of the uninitiated, the Shade is I don't want to say a villain, because he's not really a villain in Starman, but he's a gray area kind of character.
He's a former villain.
Yeah, former villain, but now just kind of raconteur.
I don't believe that covers it. I believe that is a bad explanation.
But
he's a character. He's a very gray character. He has his own motivations. He's mysterious, and he's endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, exactly. So James Robinson has always been very vocal about the fact that he's not going to return to Starman, that Starman is safe in San Francisco, and if he ever did, he would only do it with Tony Harris. And but until then, he would gladly do more Shade stories, and that's what he's been doing here with this miniseries. And the first three issues have been propelling the storyline there with art by Cully Hamner. But here with issue number four, we get a kind of revisiting to the Starman format. Which previously was I don't know if there was a schedule to it or whatnot, but every now
and then. Between arcs.
Yeah, in between arcs, there would be a single issue that was called the Times Past issue. And it would, in Starman, it would focus on either one of the earlier Starmans or the Shade or a main character in the book and just tell his tale from their past. And the great thing about the Shade is that his character goes back to the 1800s, so there's a rich, long history through the 1900s of his adventures and things like that. So it seems as if there's tons of stories to be mined. And so with this Shade miniseries, Robinson is sticking to kind of what he knows, what worked on Starman. And here we have in between, I believe Hamner's off, and we're getting a new artist to continue the story with the issue five.
So.
But issue four, we get this little one shot where Darwin Cook joins him on art. And Darwin Cook is another creator that we've praised.
Also, it is not just Darwin Cook. It's his sort of regular collaborators, Jay Bone on inks and Dave Stewart.
Yep.
On colors.
And Todd Klein. I mean, the lettering is a big deal in this issue. Between you have James Robinson writing The Shade, you have Darwin Cook drawing, you have Jay Bone inking, you have Dave Stewart coloring, and you have Todd Klein lettering.
That's a solid team.
You can't get any better than – you can get as good as that team, but you can't get any better than that.
There are a lot of Eisners with that team.
Yeah.
And exactly. So it's a solid team on board for this one shot story, which is a tale of the Shade's life back in 1944. And it actually ties into much of the Shade's kind of history with his family and his family name, the Caldecotts, and kind of his legacy. But we get a great 1940s World War II one-shot story. And if there's ever anyone better to draw that, and that I don't think there's anyone better than Darwin Cook to draw that, given that retro kind of feel that we know and love. But this you could completely pick this up and not know anything about the Shade, not know anything about the history of Starman or anything like that, and you would get a great comic book of a great kind of suspenseful, humorous action, like packs a punch, but then also for us longtime Starman fans, has a lot of depth and meaning to the character of the Shade and who he is and what his history is. And so after reading it, I just, I put it down and I got pissed when I put it down. So I'm like, God damn it. Like, don't get me wrong. I love Parker. I love what Darwin Cook's been doing the past couple of years on the Parker graphic novels. But man, could you imagine an ongoing series by Darwin, a monthly series again?
I don't have to imagine it. I've seen it.
Right. Well, it's going to happen again. And when it does happen again, despite the controversy, I'll be there reading it. So, I guess this is a taste of what's to come, what we can look forward to.
Whoa.
If the rumors are true.
But this is a great one shot. I mean, yes. We don't get them. There's been some more lately than I think in the past. But if anyone who's just a fan of Darwin Cook was curious and was turned off by the number four in the cover, it doesn't matter. It's a one shot story.
Yeah.
And you can totally enjoy it. It's wonderfully constructed in that you get a whole, as Ron said, you get a whole tale. And it doesn't feel light and doesn't feel like you're missing anything. You get just in it, and the storytelling is beautiful.
Right.
Also, that's Snow Lady.
Yeah. Well, think about it. Just on paper, not knowing anything about the story or anything like that, what you're getting here, like we mentioned, is you're getting a large amount of Eisner winners on board. Then you're getting a retro tale in the 1940s by one of the best artists who can do retro stuff. You're getting Nazis, right? You're getting a cowboy, gun-toting, motorcycle-riding hero and vigilante, right? Yep.
Are you going to make me call a 1-800 number right now?
You're getting a cross-dressing hero, which I didn't see coming from. I didn't see that coming at all.
You just believe it.
And what's great is that, like, I got to give James Robinson credit. He was born to write this Shade character.
Yeah.
Like, and throughout the issue, basically the framing device is that the Shade is writing his journal and he's reminiscing, and so the narration boxes are his kind of handwriting and his kind of his voice. And when he explains about the character who Madame Fatale or Richard Stanton, it's just, I just love that he just says, I've just got to read it directly. In my varied and some might say tawdry travels, I've encountered that breed of men who enjoy wearing women's clothing.
But the Shade's up for it.
Yeah, exactly. The Shade's down.
Listen, the Shade's not going to be like, oh, not for me. The Shade's like, put it in my mouth. I'll try it.
After a couple hundred years, you doubt for anything. Yeah. What's interesting is I think up until this point, I think it's fair to say the three of us were excited for this miniseries but weren't in love with it.
Yeah.
But for me, just even the first page, reading the captions and seeing the art, I went, oh, this issue is going to be on a different level than the first three.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the writing was even much better.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you could just tell he was locked in. Was it the collaboration with Darwin Cook? Who knows? It was just the fact that whatever was going on, that spark that was in Starman was there in the first page of this issue and continued through the whole issue.
Yeah, and my only criticism of the issue was that there wasn't nearly enough Darwin drawing Opal City. Like that third page, the last page with the title credit, I was like, oh, I would love to watch Darwin get lost in Opal City. And a lot of this action took place on a plane and a warehouse and things like that. But like the Art Deco and all that sort of stuff,
the first script had a lot of Opal. He sent it back. He's like, I'm not doing that. That's a lot of work.
I would. Speaking of scripts, I am a little lucky in that James Robinson lives here in San Francisco and he shops at the same comic store I shop at. You know, he's writing these scripts longhand.
Hmm. Of course he is.
Yeah. on a pad, he is writing them in full script. The man has beautiful handwriting. I'll give you that. It's just like, but he's writing these, and it's like, it's funny because we talk about James Robinson and how much he, you could just tell he loves these characters and it comes across on the page. And
Does he wear a top hat?
Yeah, no, I wish. That would be amazing. But I honestly would read, an ongoing of the Shades adventures written by James Robinson, drawn by Darwin Cook. I'd read that series in a second.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. It's not like it's something you went out on a ledge there.
Oh, I would totally eat that delicious ice cream. Yeah, oh no. If you put that ice cream in a bowl, I'd eat it. Well, yeah, it's very, very good ice cream. I know that's what I'm saying. way to step out there. I don't know. Wrong. I didn't have a joke at the end. I was...
No, this in a week full of really great books, this was one of the best. It was really the counterpoint to last week, and I was really happy.
Yeah,
I mean, it may not have been my pick, but it wasn't. If that wasn't the case, it was by inches.
Yeah, no, and that's the whole thing.
5-star book. It was wonderful. It was one of the best I've read in a while.
And ultimately, it was a matter of inches, and I will explain why.
Two things I want before we move on to the next thing is that A, the variant cover for this by Darwin. Yeah. I'm taking nothing away from Tony Harris, but that variant cover is amazing. And it was just in the stack, and I just got to buy it, which I was very happy about. Two, if you liked the Vigilante in this, there's a trade out of James Robinson did a miniseries of the Vigilante with Tony Simons a while back. It's a great little story.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yes.
Cool.
I have it. I'd let you borrow it, but you live really far away.
All right. Well, you know, you can mail it. It works. Okay.
And just because we have to acknowledge these things, in the Justice League cartoon, Nathan Fillion did the voice of the Vigilante.
Ooh.
Yeah. Also, if I was using a bad accent, I would say Vigilante. That's the last thing I have to say on the subject.
You know what else was a great book? Was Wolverine and the X-Men number 4.
It was so freaking good.
It was good. And the funny thing was, Nick Bradshaw is his name?
Yep.
He filled in for...
No, he did not fill in. They're the alternating artists. He is a every other arc guy.
All right, so him
he is Francesco Francavilla to the other one's Bach.
Right, so yep. Pacheco, I'm not Pacheco, Bacciolo and Bradshaw are swapping. And it took me about half the issue to really sort of get into the art. At first I was like, oh, I really like the vibe of the old art. This is different, but by the end I was enjoying it.
I love Nick Bradshaw so much. So much so that Chris Pacello, that was great, but if it was only Nick Bradshaw, I would be pleased as punch. This is admittedly, there's a huge Art Adams influence.
Oh, it's huge.
Huge Art Adams influence, but there's such an energy to it that it was great. I loved it.
What do I know Bradshaw for? I read something he did, but I...
We did a feature on him on iFanboy.
Yeah, he was an upstart.
Oh, but what book did he do?
He did an X-Men annual last year that pretty much got everyone's attention, and then he did did some X-Men the other one, Astonishing X-Men stuff recently.
Oh, okay, I didn't read any of that. I guess I don't know anything.
But for me, the strength of this book, this is the issue that came back to the first one, in that it was mostly about the school and what was going on at the school.
Yep.
Which to me is fantastic.
Well, no, not only great, but like one page in, first page, you immediately got the tie-in from Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I thought was great was that they didn't just drop Genesis and Angel into Wolverine and the X-Men and just give you a box to say go read Uncanny X-Force. They actually Bradshaw recreated the scene, you know, the scenes in X-Force in his own style, in his own way, similar dialogue, you know, but Jason Aaron kind of made it his own. It gives you context. You don't need to read Uncanny X-Force to understand where they're coming from, but it does help if you did. But I thought they handled it very elegantly. And then, I mean, like the title of this issue was Just Another Day. What is it? Just Another Day in Westchester County. That's exactly what it is. There's such a mundaneness to the series. Like where it's just this is the next day and this is life goes on and they're running a school and I loved that they're having a faculty meeting, you know,
and there's a class
you would love that.
No, I did love it. There's a faculty meeting, then there's a class in the future, future history class where Deathlok tells them what their futures are going to be, and then there's problems with Angel being in the school because he has got no memory of who he is. He thinks he's a real Angel, and I think what was great about that was you really got to tie in some more Iceman stuff and the Ice. You know, they're both founders of the team, and Angel's in trouble. They're old friends, so of course, Iceman's the one who's going to freak out about it, and you forget that sometimes because he's portrayed to be so young. But this everything I wanted to love about this book, I love. Yeah. I mean, this is about the school. It's about kids. It's about teaching them to be mutants and people and heroes and being at a school. And this might be my four issues. It might be my all time favorite X-Men book.
Yeah, it's fantastic. There's so much great potential. And Bradshaw put in little bits and pieces to make it special. Like you know when they establish at the school, you see Toad and Dupe doing the landscaping, which is funny. And then the faculty meeting, there's a dartboard with Cyclops' face on it. You know, like they're just little touches like that make it. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I like Bradshaw is because it's just so detailed and puts in so much. You know, so much kind of there's so much stuff going on in every panel, and then you know you've got a bunch of compelling storylines. There's drama here. It's soap, you know, it's that soap opera nature that made me love the X-Men so much back in the 80s. It's kind of back, and I love it. And then you get the big cliffhanger at the end that apparently Kitty is pregnant.
She's really coming along quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
She had a flat stomach on one page. Turn the page. She's got a big, big old stomach.
Yep. So who knows what's going on there? I love the way Bradshaw draws Genesis, the little apocalypse dude. I thought that was cool. I thought the glimpse into the future was awesome.
Yeah.
You get to see not only as Deathlok is predicting everybody's future, you get a glimpse into many of these students. You see Kid Gladiator. You see Quentin Quire, who's got a little Phoenix-esque jacket on. Really interesting. Really, really interesting. So, and I'm loving the Brood character, by the way.
The Brood character's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
No, the characters are great. It's funny. It's interesting. But it's very much not the normal kind of superhero book, which I think turns people off. But I love it.
Yep.
I love every bit of it.
Yep. So the Jason Aaron Palooza continued with Wolverine 300, which this is Aaron's last arc on Wolverine. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so this is the big 300th issue, and it was good. I thought the multiple artists were a little rougher than I would have liked to have been. Basically, you had Adam Kubert, Ron Garney, and Steve Sanders doing multiple chapters throughout the issue. Wolverine returns to Japan to deal with the fallout of the Clan Ishida falling down, and now Sabretooth is back and stuff like that happened. And it's a lot of the various – it almost – you get the feeling of Jason Aaron kind of wrapping up all of his plot threads from his run on Wolverine now.
And Wolverine versus ninjas is a classic Wolverine trope. He always eventually goes back to Japan to fight a lot of ninjas. That's just what he does. He's been doing it for decades.
He's the best he is at that.
Yeah.
Yes. Not only killing or whatever he does, but also ninja fighting. And,
well, yeah. Right. It's his whole oeuvre.
There's a lot of goofy stuff in here, too, like the flight to Japan. He went to the bathroom and the stewardess came out and handed everybody swords and they all attacked him. Yeah. But it was also fun and interesting. He's got a really great handle on Wolverine and... I enjoyed this too. This was really good.
Yeah, this is great. Although the backup with the Jeff Loeb written, Simone Bianchi drawn, how Sabretooth came back, that was painful.
Oh, I didn't even read that.
I was like, oh, fucking, really, really? It just reminded me how bad that
was. I didn't need to know. I just need to know he's back. It doesn't matter how. Yeah.
But
yeah, it was some weirdly rough spots in the art, especially from guys like Garney, who are usually really good. So yeah. I wonder how much of a time constraint they were under. But overall, I thought it was pretty solid.
I do like Sabretooth's new costume. Dorky. But then towards the end of the story, and I forget what artist it is, it's whoever drew. There's a panel. Oh, I just love how Jason Aaron just does wacky things. Like they call the Sky Yakuza. And it's a bunch of Yakuza guys covered in tattoos on parachutes. It's just like wacky ideas that only Jason Aaron seems to come up with. But there's one towards the end of the story. There's one really poorly drawn Sabretooth panel that was.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
Yeah, I was like, that's not good. That's not good at all.
That's a Kubert page. I don't know. It was solid. It was very solid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Despite the dubious numbering on the cover.
Yeah. But then continuing, not so much the Jason Aaron thread, but the Wolverine thread. X-Factor number 230 featured Wolverine. Peter David is actually quietly not, and again, you know, X-Factor is one where we talked about where you guys liked it way in the beginning because it had noirish and it was Madrox and different, but X-Factor has very quietly solidified, become one of the most consistently good X books for X fans on the racks month in, month out. And with this issue, X-Factor kind of connects with Regenesis, and Havoc and Polaris join the team. That was the big kind of the big ending. And a great art by Emmanuel Lupacino. I thought the art was really solid. But I realized as I was reading this issue, I'm thinking, for the past like 6 months, I've really been liking X-Factor a lot. And it's great to see it now link up to what's been going on with, basically Wolverine comes down and tells X-Factor what he's doing with the school and how he wants them to be involved. And all the while they're dealing with the fact that Madrox is dead and he's currently on ice. And basically what happened was is that they found out that Layla has the power to bring people back to life. Guido died and she brought him back to life. But now he doesn't have a soul. And so now that they're trying to decide whether she should bring Madrox back to life and whether or not, should you be messing with life and death? That kind of question. But Peter David, he puts in little funny little things. Like at one point, Longshot turns to Guido and goes, "So what's it like not having a soul?" And Guido's like, "James Brown doesn't do it for me anymore." Like just like little throwaways, or like at one point where Wolverine comes down and starts telling them what about the schism, and Longshot goes, "Oh, is this about your fallout with Cyclops?" And Wolverine's like, "How do you know?" And he's like, Longshot says, "Allison told me, Dazzler." And he goes, "Oh, you still talk?" Like just introducing like little background of the characters and the soap opera aspect of it. Just it's working well with all the rest of the books. So I don't know. X-Factor is good. To see Wolverine. It wasn't a groan. And here's Wolverine guest starring. Like it served a purpose. It moved the story forward. And now that Havoc and Polaris are back, I can't wait to see where it goes. So.
Josh, come back to us and talk about.
Also, wait to add to that quickly. Madrox isn't really dead.
I bet it was just one of his multiples.
No. He's doing something really interesting with the power and with the multiples and stuff like that. And if you read it, but it's again, Peter David is doing some magic with Madrox. So if you ask me.
So listen, on any other, let's get back and say some nice things about Jason Aaron, because frankly, it's been too long. This guy, he's working his butt off. He's putting it out there. He doesn't get anything.
No credit.
It's a shame. And I blame ourselves. First of all, because I just, we need to take responsibility for that. And any other week, the Shade number 4, easily a pick of the week. I'm not saying it's not. But then on any other week that Shade 4 didn't come out, Scout number 55 is pick of the week. This is the outlet of what a lot of people have been waiting for.
The culmination
in this
of 5 years of comics.
Yeah. And it, there's still five to go, which I'm glad because you need a lot of time to sort out the things that have happened. But the Shunka Dash fight, which is what most of this issue was, which was a silent sequential panel smorgasbord of wonder between Dash, who's got his mouth wired shut, can't talk.
Fight.
Yeah, yeah. I likened it to the Dan Doherty Captain Turner fight for those of you who watch Deadwood, which is my favorite television fight. This is this silent, wet thumping of fists and dry wood cracking and breaking, and just this brutal, awful fight between these two characters who have hated each other with this, you know, damnation flame hate. This, they really just hated each other all the time. You know, and now we kind of know why, because Shunka, but Shunka can't get love, and that's sad.
Yeah.
I love, just shut up.
Okay,
like it's terrible. It's just a wonderful. Gera's never been bad, but the Gera who is drawing this book now is incredible. Is in terms of storytelling, it was just a wonderfully laid out book, and it was exact. Like once the fight started, I was like, this is going to go the whole issue because it has to. Like this has to be the focus of the issue, and so many times in comic books, especially, we talk about people are always talking about fights, and there's, you know, that's all Marvel is now. It's just fights. You know, it's, oh, I want to see the Hulk versus Thor. And like, this was a fight that was built up and meant something and went on for a long time and was worth the time it took to
read it. A fight's only good when there's a consequence to the fight. Right. Otherwise, it's just noise. So this was 5 years of consequence, and there's emotional resonance. And if you've been reading the book, you know why. Things are spilling out physically that have been happening emotionally. And you know, there's two characters who we've been following for a long time meet their ultimate end of this issue. And then the issue actually ends itself with the moment we've been waiting for since the very first issue of Scalped, which is, Bad Horse revealing to Red Crow that he's an FBI agent and arresting him. So that's what we've been waiting for the very beginning, when we found out that Bad Horse was an undercover FBI agent. And the
precursor to that, by the way, was also to him revealing it, like, because he had his mouth wired shut.
Yeah.
So that was groom. And also the nunchucks were not an afterthought still.
Yeah.
Oh, they're back.
I feel like if you get whacked multiple times in the head with nunchucks, you probably are staying down. I don't know. I've never been whacked with nunchucks, but I've...
Shunka's a tough dude.
Yeah.
His name even sounds tough.
Shunka. But this was fantastic. Gera, as you said, was amazing in this issue, as he is every time. But this was really a tour de force for him because, as you said, most of the issue was silent. Just wonderful. And five more issues. I'm emotionally preparing for it. I think it feels like to me that Aaron is wrapping this up the right way.
Yeah. And Gera, I believe, did at least some of the sound effects on the board. Just note there. I thought that was kind of cool. On the other side of Vertigo, I guess a very different kind of story, is Unwritten number 33. And they've been doing this thing where they're double shipping it, and they're naming the ones in the middle like 32.5, 30, which sounds on paper just absurd. I don't want to do that. Doesn't matter. It's been really, really good, and I get the sense now. And I didn't really think about it, but I guess it makes sense. I get the sense that they're starting to wrap up this story, which is fine. It doesn't need to go on forever. Tommy, who is not Harry Potter but is similar. But older, has gotten lots of people to believe in him. And in doing so, he's become very powerful. So then he's gone on his kick-ass quest to take care of everything. There's this really cool scene where they raise the spirit of an architect in the form of like a statue to tell them sort of where the bad guys are hiding. And then he goes in there to kick butt. And obviously, you know, something goes wrong. But it has been a lot of fun. Different inker on this one than it has been. So it looked a little different. That was the only complaint I had. It wasn't that it was bad. It's just that it was different. It's been a great book. I don't know how long it'll keep going, but you know, if this is sort of the end of the story, then it's been tons of fun.
iFanboy is part of the Graphically family, and at graphically.com you can find over 5,000 comic books from over 300 publishers, people like Image Comics and Archaea and Boom and Top Cow and Top Shelf and many, 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 many more. And beyond the comics at graphically.com, you can also get Graphically Newsstand apps, which is where you can subscribe to some of your favorite titles, and they'll just show up to you every month on your phone without you having to do anything. There's a little pop-up, little one on your newsstand knowing you've got a new issue. Took books like The Walking Dead or Morning Glories or Chew, things like that. And there's also books on the Nook and the Kindle Fire. There's lots of people reading books on the tablets. A lot of people got tablets for Christmas and discovering comics on those devices, and you can find all kinds of books there, as well as other tablets and things like that. And if you follow twitter.com/graphically, you can get all the big news, and go to graphically.com for some digital comics.
Excellent. So to make sure we talk about Jason Aaron at least every 5 minutes.
That guy! I've been trying to think of his name.
Right. Punisher Max number 21 is the
second to last issue
ending Jason Aaron's run on Punisher Max. And when I look back on Punisher Max, what the memories will come to me, what I'll think of is Punisher fighting with tools.
Yes,
and that's my really Jason Aaron has between the fight with Bullseye with the construction and now here the big fight with the Kingpin, which basically ends with the Punisher hitting him over the head with a hammer, driving the hammer into his head.
I wonder if he recently moved and had to do some renovations.
I don't know. But man, this has just been, I'm gonna miss this book. It's just been so much fun.
This was fantastic. The Punisher gets shot out all to hell and he's dying and bleeding to death, but he still has the energy to fight the Kingpin, drive a hammer in his head, and then shoot him in the back of the head, and then stumble home in a pool of blood. It's hard to believe the next issue won't end in his death, but yeah. This has been wonderful.
Yep.
One of my favorite books.
This has been amazing. It's just been amazing. And the great, great 8-panel page by Steve Dillon, which is pulling in all the key moments of his life while the fight is going on. You know, like he's flashing back to being in boot camp, flashing back to his family dying, flashing back to, you know, to becoming Punisher, the fight with the Bullseye, like all stuff like that. Oh, it was great. So, yeah.
I worry that Scott Snyder will listen to this episode and then secretly resent Jason Aaron.
No, I think Scott's
is that a problem? Okay.
Well, he should put out 4 books in 1 week like Jason Aaron did.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I think he only had 1 book this week. And it's just like, come on, get with it. It's fine. I want to talk about the activity number 2. By Nathan Edmondson on story and Mitch Gerads on art. The last issue I liked, pretty standard in terms of story for like a here's the spy team, kind of like the Losers. But as I was reading it this time, I found myself really in love with the visuals of it. I just think the pages were really well put together, and it was exciting, and it was fast, and it moved really fast, and the dialogue actually really helped that a lot because it was that sort of quick patter of you know, spy military chat, lots of jargon and things like that did well. But I've just been really impressed by the storytelling of it. Like a bunch of things all sort of happen at once, and you're not entirely sure what the whole deal is. But page by page, it just looked really good. It was really energetic.
There's a ton of momentum in this, yes. In this issue. Yeah, just like very always moving forward. Yeah,
yeah, really. And well, that's a really fun thing in comics. That's one thing we do well.
Yeah. So Frankenstein, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 5, it was the last half of the Frankenstein-OMAC crossover. And while in OMAC we thought it was fun, I was curious to see how it would work in Frankenstein, and it fell flat, if you ask me.
Well, it was basically just the other side of what was happening already. It was a crossover, but it wasn't. And the story didn't progress really to this issue. It just, you saw the story from the perspective of Frankenstein and S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
As opposed to OMAC and Brother Eye.
Yeah, and really the most interesting stuff I found was the stuff that happened at the end of the issue, really. You know, like with the when he's back getting his arm fixed and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it was good that Lemire was able to still have some forward movement in the story and with the character, but this just felt really shoehorned in. And maybe because I read the OMAC version already, maybe because OMAC just looks silly not drawn by Giffen in Kirby style, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who knows? Whatever, it's canceled. It doesn't matter anymore. So,
have you been reading this book the whole time, or
yeah.
So I this is the first issue I read since the first. So it was, I love the art. That's, I mean, I might pick up the next issue because I love that so much. But
yeah,
you're right. It was. I was kind of surprised. It's basically the same story. So you didn't necessarily have to read either in both issues. It was the same thing.
You didn't at all. Yeah, exactly. So, New Avengers number 20. Just some quick thoughts. It's the New Avengers versus the New Dark Avengers. And while this was good, Bendis writing these characters is great. I'm sick of Diodato drawing Tommy Lee Jones as Norman, but whatever, that's been going on for years. I finished this issue and I'm like, wow, I've read that before.
That's why I dropped this a couple like 6 months ago. Huh?
Yeah, it just feels very treading the same ground. Doesn't feel, you know what I mean? Like, even though the characters are different, slightly different, and now Daredevil's involved and all this sort of stuff, and Norman has a new kind of plan and a new secret, you know, evil group and stuff like that. It just seems very redundant. So
that's why I got off.
Yeah,
earlier.
Oh, really? What'd you do?
I knew about that. I knew that was going to happen. Yeah.
Cupping his balls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
cup what?
Oh.
What?
No, I just recently read the Invincible Viltrumite War trade. It's volume 14. Volume 15 came out this week, but I was one back. So I read that literally last week, and I loved almost every moment of it.
Yeah. Invincible is it's tough. It falls in that category of it's so consistently good. It's hard for us to talk about it, you know?
Well, even, you know, I would even say from an artistic standpoint, like, Ryan Otley's a guy who really takes his art seriously, and so he pushes himself. Like, he's getting better.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Like, his sequences that he's doing are lovingly crafted, I would say. But you're right in that it's harder to say things about it because it's still good. I mean, but at the same time, you know, Kirkman's actually not sticking with a status quo with this. Like,
no,
he's changing things. He's changing the game.
Yeah.
A lot, and but another good issue.
Yeah.
You know,
so
on this path to
7, do we have the new Invincible yet, or is it still Mark?
Forgot about that. I think that's the Avengers closet. They're like, here's a Black Invincible. What Black Invincible? That didn't happen.
this picks up the last couple issues have been drawn by Corey Walker as he returned to the title, and we focused on Alan and Mark and Invincible's dad. And now that storyline has collided, has come back, and now Otley is back, and it kind of ties back into what's going on with Invincible on Earth and the ramifications of the Viltrumite War, and you know, it's tying into that. And this is the most unique, probably one of the best superhero books on the market. If you're not reading it, and if you're into superheroes, there's no excuse. Like, you're really missing out. So
I think that we can safely say that if there were an Eisner for Zero Gravity Blood,
yeah.
There's nobody to even compete in that category.
They would absolutely win. They would absolutely win.
He's the Dave Stewart of Zero Gravity Blood. Just every year, knocking it down every year.
So, did either of you guys give Scarlet Spider number one a chance?
No.
No.
I like Ryan Thigman's art a lot, but I don't have any affection for the Scarlet Spider. In fact, he's one of the reasons why Spider-Man almost collapsed many years ago.
Well, it's not actually the Scarlet Spider.
Yeah, but it's the whole idea of the clone and that whatever this became led to this. And I feel like going back and retreading this whole era is a bit of a nose thumb. But
Well, fair enough.
Sell it to me, Ron.
That said, I was really impressed by it. I thought it was really solid. I thought Yost has come up with a great concept in terms of, and right there on the cover, it says all the power, none of the responsibility. So when you've got someone who has all of Peter Parker's powers but none of his upbringing, what happens? And you get a lot of moments here where he's just, you know, basically Kane is on the run after, you know, after the events of Spider Island. People know about his past crimes, and he's fear that he might, you know, have to deal with that. So he's trying to run to Mexico, and he stops in Houston and, you know, gets involved with stuff and chooses the hero route. And in terms of a good single superhero kind of story, it's intriguing. I'm curious to see if a new character like this, and while Kane isn't new and the concept of the Scarlet Spider isn't new, for all intents and purposes, this is, you know, you could read it. You don't need to have known the Clone Saga. You don't need to know who Kane is. You just get the idea it's somebody with spider powers who has a different approach than Peter, and it was just really engaging, and Stegman's art was great. I thought it was really...
How does one swing around an area that is primarily single-story buildings and very spread out?
Have you been to Houston?
There's only a downtown once. Area that's got
it was like walking in hot soup.
Yeah. Well, there is a moment where he comments on the humidity.
There are a lot of adult establishments.
Yeah. Well,
in Houston.
It appears as if he found the two tall buildings and swang in between them, because there is a panel where he's swinging between the buildings.
Swanging.
Perfect.
But no, Stegman did a great job on the art. I mean, it looks really, really good, and
there's no doubt on that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, if you're looking for something new and something, and who knows how long it's going to last? I hope it lasts longer, you know, just because I like Stegman's art. But I was
that guy will kill a series.
I was pleasantly surprised. So
good.
Captain America number 7 sure looked good, didn't it?
I just don't care about the story at all.
That's why I dropped.
Oh, I'm
I
so
knew that.
Glad I'm not alone. Oh, no. My God.
I left 3 issues ago.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
I'm not
don't,
gonna.
Don't get me wrong. It looks
gorgeous. Yeah. It's funny because this is all about the mad bomb.
Yeah.
And I was recently looking through the Captain America Kirby omnibus, and that almost entire omnibus is about the mad bomb, which is funny.
Oh, yeah. So that's all Kirby. That's all, yeah.
But, God, I just don't care. And, you know, it's like you talked about it with New Avengers. It's just... It's been too long. Yeah. It's just been too long for Brubaker and Captain America.
I mean, the tough thing about this is that I haven't cared about Captain America since this relaunch, since with McNiven. I didn't care really about that one. With this one, Brubaker's really, really trying to play in the Grunewald Kirby playground, you know, because Grunewald did the Cap, de-aging kind of storyline as well, and then and now with the Mad Bomb and that sort of thing. I just don't care. It just has no weight or ramification to me at all.
Does Henry Kissinger show up in this one?
No,
it's not.
He does
like,
in the Kirby stuff.
Yeah, yes, no, that would be amazing.
Alan Davis though is wonderful. There's a couple of great shots of Captain America training to get because he was de Super Soldier Serum last issue, which he just did in the Super Soldier miniseries, which is why.
Well, no, I think they were relating it to that because it was
no, but it's like you just did it last year.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I finished this going, I don't care, but it's, I don't know what to do. I don't know.
Get off the stage. You've been playing for 5 hours, Bruce Springsteen.
Stop. So.
Oh my God, they're still doing Born to, come on. Oh, I get it.
So those are the books that came out this week. It was a packed week. It was hard to pick which books to talk about. I could have talked about 10 more, but we don't have a ton of time. But go to ifanboy.com/comics. You see all the books that came out this week, and you can go and write your, do your picks and make your pick of the weeks and do your reviews and do your ratings and all things like that. And want to highlight the top 5 picks of the week from the iFanboy community. And number 5 comes in. It's going to be a pattern we're going to see happen here in the top 5. Number 5 is Punisher Max, number 21, with 5% of the pick of the week's Jason Aaron charting at number 5. The number 4 pick of the week was Batwoman, number 5, from J.H. Williams, with 7% of the picks of the week's. Number 3, once again, Jason Aaron comes in with Scalp, number 55, with 8% of the pick of the week's. Number 2, a larger number than I thought agreed with me, with The Shade number 4 coming at number 2 with 60% of the pick of the weeks.
Smaller than I thought.
That's Darwin Cook's influence.
Yeah. And number 1 was Jason Aaron again with Wolverine and the X-Men number 4 with 38% of the pick of the weeks.
They need to get that guy a contract.
Yeah, they really I think he's onto something, to be honest with you.
Someone should give him some books to write.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, you know that in college, George Clinton played for 4 hours plus in the gym?
I didn't go to that.
I did. I was deaf for like a week afterwards.
I didn't go to that.
Wow.
4 hours.
4 hours. I don't know why.
I'm gonna go.
Yeah. Oh, you still going? Okay. I'm gonna go.
Hey, are you guys still down there? You couldn't ask because we didn't have cell phones then.
But, yeah.
Well, some people did, but they were really big, and you kept them in your car. And if you used them, it was like $8 a minute.
I had a beeper in college.
Huh. I'm not making the joke.
Anyway, that's from Long Island.
I need to use the phone.
Could you get the phone?
That's what it is.
True story. All right.
Ron would come in and rip my blankets off all the time, and I couldn't get anywhere with residents.
It wasn't funny.
I was in LA once, and I was going up an escalator, and I was with my wife. She was my girlfriend then. And then coming down was Tammy. And after a second, Lindsay and I looked at each other, and I was like, what's that? And I just go, it wasn't that funny. And then we had to be very quiet.
Yeah. It wasn't as screechy as you're doing. It was more.
There's a thing in comedy sometimes.
Sometimes.
Where you take a reality, which is fine, but you just turn it up a little bit, trying to get more of a reaction. Sometimes, I mean, it's a little bit shticky. I'll give you that. It's a little hacky, but I've fallen guilty to it sometimes.
Anyway, so we didn't talk about Batwoman number 5, but somebody reviewed it.
The Mythical Reader reviewed it. He's the Mythical Reader, the one that's where the reader. Where's the reader?
I think it's supposed to say new.
The Mythical New Reader. Give the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And pick of the week percentage, as Ron said, was 7%. And the Mythical Reader says, and it's very important because he's the Mythical Reader, so what he says should be very important. The subject matter involved here, past and present, life and death, truth and deception, and is varied and complex. Yet, in spite of the brevity of the medium's form, the book adeptly interweaves its well-developed elements into a cohesive, richly layered narrative. In demanding more from the medium, this book challenges and elevates it Batwoman serves as an aspirational model for what comics can achieve.
Now, that is just one paragraph from what is a very well-written review. So I encourage everyone to go to the website, go to ifanboy.com, go to the page about this podcast, click on the link to read the review, because the Mythical Reader, he's doing some good reviewing. So
who's he trying to impress with all those big words?
Impressed me.
You.
Yeah. You know,
producer
I don't
show.
Book learning.
Producer of the show, but who picks the user reviews? Another gorgeous issue from J.H. Williams. I think the story fell kind of flat. The interesting elements were the DEO elements and the sidekick elements. The main story, the murder mystery, I couldn't even really tell you what it was about or what happened.
Yeah,
I didn't know who that person was that she was dealing with, but I was very happy that we just got on with it in the Agent Chase arena.
Yeah, agreed.
Who I don't really
know. Interesting development. Batwoman turns down Batman Incorporated to join the DEO.
Yeah.
And others, she's going to be a bit at odds with the DEO, a bit at odds with Batman, you know, a bit at odds with her father. So she's really on her own.
Yep.
Because even though she's part of the DEO, she's not really part of the DEO. So it's that part was interesting. It was the murder mystery that drove the story. I didn't really care for. But
yeah. But it was fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, gorgeous. Gorgeous.
I think it starts Amy Reader's tenure on art, which should be good.
Gorgeous.
Amy Reader's good.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Are we not done?
It's interesting to see what people will think after seeing all the J.H. Williams art.
He's coming back. He's coming back. So.
No, he's coming back, but this is a very different style.
Yeah.
You're going to see a dip in that line graph. Because, you know, people will stop reading it. Bello, 1234, set of Whispers number one, which is the new... Joshua Luna book. Gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. The pick of the week percentage was 0.1%. Joshua Luna of the Luna Brothers writes and draws his first solo series. I said that. The protagonist of the story is a germaphobe that can listen to his closest friends and family's minds and can become their inner voice. If this doesn't pique your interest, I don't know what will. Strong characterization, great premise, and solid art makes this a must buy.
And agreed. Bello 1234. That was the entire review that he wrote. He or she wrote. But that summed it up pretty much. If you read Girls of the Sword or Ultra, you're familiar with the Luna Brothers. Interesting to see Joshua Luna kind of branching out on his own and writing and drawing this. And I dug it. So this was my light week pick, and I was glad that it turned out to be pretty good. So.
I hope those guys are okay with each other.
I know. I think there might have been a falling out. I'm not sure.
Wow.
No, I don't know. I'm kidding. I don't have no knowledge.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, let's start. Let's see if we can get this up on Bleeding Cool.
Well, that's not hard.
Oh, that's good. If you want to rate and review your comics, go to ifmr.com/comics. You can pick them and rate them and put your reviews in there. We might even pick them to read them on the show.
Cool. If they're good, make them good.
If they're good.
If they're good. Or if nobody else did one that week.
So...
It's true. Sometimes I'm
on to the emails. Our first email comes from Nathan from Atlanta.
For certain books. I mean, if we're looking for a specific book for the show, I mean, there's like one
everybody
that
just
they
fucking
win.
Everybody just wrote about Avengers. We're already talking about that.
Yeah. Look, if you're going to write about the book we're going to talk about, it's not going to get on the show.
Just how it works.
Just know that. Yep. Listen, if it's the pick of the week and you go in and write your review after that, that's great. That's good for the website. It's fine. Not going to hear it on the show.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe, unless it's awesome. If you do it in verse... I'm not saying that's going to happen. There's a chance.
Challenge.
Wow. Yeah, impress me.
All right, on to the email. Our first email is from Nathan from Atlanta, who wrote in saying, the other day I was rewatching Mad Men, and it occurred to me that if this is a comic book, it would have to be written and drawn by Howard Chaykin, which led me to wonder, if popular TV shows were comics, who would be the creative teams? Who would do The Wire, Breaking Bad, Battlestar Galactica? What shows would you pick and what creators would make them?
Michael Lark would draw The Wire.
All right. Who would write it?
It's easy to say Greg Rucka, but it's not Greg Rucka.
Yeah.
Jason Aaron would write Breaking Bad.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to be, because I don't think many people would read it, but Peter David would write Battlestar Galactica.
I was going to throw Abnett Lanning that way, too.
Oh, that would be good, too. I would do that.
Yeah.
Who should draw that, though? Who would draw Breaking Bad? That's a good...
And by the way, I love Chaykin. Not sure I agree with the Mad Men, but
Because if he drew that, then everybody would people would hate it.
Cook would do
Darwin or Allred. Darwin or Allred.
Allred, the Mad Men book, yeah.
Yeah. They could alternate arcs.
Breaking Bad could be Phil Noto.
Really? I see somebody much more scratchy. Somebody who's way more sketchy than it's just like it's
Jock.
About to break out of the
Jock.
Jock.
Interesting.
I don't know.
It's curious.
Not seeing it. Battlestar Galactica, you need like a somebody who can do characters really well, realistic looking people, but also do like big space battle things. Like,
to do the George Jaunty-esque Buffy treatment.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Battlestar.
We should really look at these questions ahead of time.
I did. Did you watch?
I hate emails like this. They're like, "What are your top five stories of all time?" This is gonna take me forever to write back to. I don't know. I gotta do it just for you.
Did you watch the Portlandia episode, by the way?
No,
not that one yet.
Oh, it was so fucking funny.
The link was broken by the time I got.
It's been on. Anyone who's a fan of Battlestar Galactica needs to watch the first episode of Portlandia. It was genius. It was so good. Just for James Callis alone.
It's like what artist would you put in this book? And all of a sudden, I can't think of any artist in the world. They're all gone. Like, there's the only person who exists is Alan Davis. I'm like, oh, that's not quite right.
I was going to say Alan Davis too.
The only artist I can think of right now. It's as if he's the only person who exists. Kara would be great for Breaking Bad.
Yes,
that's
Kara.
What I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It's Kara and Jason Aaron, their next project together, Breaking Bad.
There you go.
I don't want that.
From Boom Studios.
It's already a show. I didn't expect him to do a licensed book. They're just doing the show's storyline.
Surprising.
They must be paying him a lot because this is just garbage.
Also, it's the same book as their other book.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
First.
Oh, man. What artist would draw Battlestar? Who's a really good space artist?
Sean Phillips.
Yeah.
We're thinking about it. We're like, well.
Jack Kirby.
Jim Starlin.
No.
Otley can't do the faces.
Yes, he can. Oh, he can do lots. He's done lots of great acting.
Yeah,
he's great for it.
True, Otley. I'd go with
he's
Otley.
He's never going to leave Invincible. We're going to see him draw that until he dies.
Yeah, never would. I was going to say Cary Randolph, but that's just because I read Starborn.
Yeah, so you have no imagination.
Yeah, none whatsoever.
You know whatever's in front of Ron at the time.
You know who'd be good in this spy movie with lots of running around? That Jason Bourne guy.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig?
I was a clueless. I was a clueless executive in that character.
Yeah.
See.
All right. Next email comes from Vicious Smith, who says, "What books do you forbid yourself from reading on the bus or train? For me, Preacher used to be number one, but now I think Love and Rockets has topped it. Why? Lots of love and quite a few rockets."
I know what Connor's going to say. Connor's going to say, "F everybody. I read what I want all the time."
No. Well, sort of. I mean, I've read Preacher on the train. We did that Preacher show many years ago for the video show. We had to reread the whole series back when we used to read. And I read the whole thing on the subway commuting to work. I probably only wouldn't read something that had like explicit porn.
I'll tell you what I don't read on the bus here in San Francisco. I don't read Hawkman. That's yep. Smut.
You don't want to be seen in public with it?
Exactly.
I know. I don't like to read comics that look like stereotypical stupid childish comics.
Yeah.
I just don't care.
Some of them just look like that. No, I don't know. It's just like a thing. Yeah. But I mean, the other side of it being like, I think that the idea of read comics in public day is retarded.
Well, but that's a different topic.
But the thing is, like, if you, I don't
because I always read comics in public.
If you're reading it, why are you ashamed to read it anywhere?
It's not that. Specifically, I remember reading Preacher on a train and like sitting next to a woman who was clearly very religious, and I just thought, I can't do this to her right now. Right. She's gonna think I'm evil. It's just like a courtesy thing.
I'm trying. Generally, I take the I don't give a shit. I'll just buy.
I pretty much do too.
Yeah, I'll read whatever I want. But I'm trying to think of I'm pretty sure there was books where I was like, ooh.
Yeah, no, I know. Like there definitely has been where I was just like. I'm sure that I've been reading like Scalped on the train or something. There's like a kid sitting next to me. It's just three pages of them doing heroin and fucking.
Connor, you know what I just remembered? Do you remember that year we went to San Diego?
Which one?
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
No, but when you and I were on the flight together and I brought my laptop and I was watching Old School.
You started watching Old School.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I'm saying. Embarrassed about it, but you're like, you know, I just feel like this isn't the I was watching.
All I say is that when you're sitting in the aisle seat on a plane and you're watching Old School, the basement Jello wrestling scene is very long.
Yeah. Oh, I was watching the same thing, like on a flight. I was watching Game of Thrones on an iPad, and I was like, put it down.
Yep.
Watch it. Put it down. Because I was next to like a kid or something like that.
Yeah, no,
it was that. It was Rome. It was Rome, which is like.
At least it wasn't Spartacus.
Well, have you seen Rome?
Yeah.
It's like that, but with a good script.
I'm not going to flaunt something that's risky, but I'm also not going to shy away from it. Like when I read Preacher, I didn't be like, "Hey, look at these pages. Everyone in the train car, look at these boobs." It was just kind of like, I just you know, I didn't flaunt it.
Maybe that's what I did wrong.
Yeah.
Well, if only hindsight, man. Anyway.
So this, I think probably Lost Girls would be the line for me. That's probably it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Lost Girls on the train.
I do remember this isn't actually related to the bad material, but I was reading risque material. I was reading Jinx. I think it was Jinx on a plane once, and there's a double page spread where it like twists and turns and spins around. That was a pain in the ass on a plane.
That was Torso.
Yeah, Torso. Like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
I've got poking the other guy with my elbows. Sorry. I'm just trying to. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. So if you have a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com under the voicemail. Our first question's got a question that I've been asking myself as well.
Hey, guys. This is Logan from South Carolina. And I was just curious, with the new Green Lantern comic that was released with the new DCU, I was wondering what could be done for the comic book to be better, because let's be frank, it is not a good Green Arrow, and I'm a big Green Arrow fan. So if you could just give this question a pretty decent answer, which you guys usually do, but not sometimes. So thank you. Bye.
Most of that voicemail was pretty good. some of it wasn't.
I mean,
no, I'm not going to do the. You know, well, you brought it on yourself, Logan.
To be fair, he's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong at all. I'm shocked anyone's still listening. I guarantee you that I've lost people this episode. Someone at home right now has got their headphones on. They go, you're damn right.
Slam. So where did they go wrong with Green Arrow, Connor?
Bad writing.
Yeah.
Bad art.
Well, no, bad writing, bad art, but also I think
premise.
I think in terms of trying to recreate the character, just doing it in a contrived, not compelling way at all. Like, it just lacked any sort of direction and lacked any sort of hook, you know.
I don't know that the premise is contrived, because the premise is basically just de-aged him.
Yeah.
And it's the same character. So, I mean, I don't know. Premise-wise, they made him basically Steve Jobs, but that's what they would happen in the modern-day world. So, like, the premise, I don't think it's the problem. It's just that the art was too much in the 90s. I think Dan Jurgens is art belongs in a certain era, and I think the writing wasn't strong. And I think when it comes down to it, what is a comic book? It's writing and art. And if the writing and art are both bad or inappropriate, then you're going to have a bad comic book.
Unless it's really good, it is a tough sell to modern audiences without using the nostalgia factor, because it's a dude who has all these resources and he uses a bow and arrow. And in this world, and in ones with meta-human supervillains, a bow and arrow is silly.
Yep.
There's never been a Hawkeye series that has been able to maintain on its own.
But Arrow's one of the more popular DC characters. So
he's had his moments in the sun too. He can be done well. I mean, I think that, you know, the hard traveling heroes era proved that Green Arrow can be really kind of compelling and really kind of a, you know, play up the Robin Hood socially responsible kind of, you know, like that side of things. But they just haven't done that. And then more recently
they've done it like a bunch of times over.
True,
like,
yeah.
You need to think of a new thing, and it has to be really good, and that's a huge challenge.
Yeah,
you have to be very good to do that. I think a lot of what was possible with that character has been done.
Yeah.
So then they said, well, let's try to change it, but they did that badly, which is what's happened with most of the DC series that have quote-unquote failed, is that they tried to reboot it, but they did it badly.
Yeah.
Because it's hard.
Yeah. I'm honestly surprised it survived the first cut.
Well, because it's a Green Arrow.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah.
There's a show in development. He's a major character. They're not going to cancel the book. They'll just change the creative team.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just the thing – you know, my first Green Arrow that I ever read was in Dark Knight Returns. Like, I think of him as older and grizzly. I like that. I know that doesn't sound incredibly saleable to you know, if you're a marketing person. But
it's not.
It took away everything about him that I found interesting. Green Arrow year one.
He's been done in many, many different ways. And he's a very malleable character. He had the 70s era that Ron mentioned. They had the pre-Vertigo era with Mike Grell. That was an adult superhero book. They did the sort of adventuring married couple book. I mean, he can fit into lots of different buckets.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of finding.
But he was the same character in all those, and he's not that character in this book.
Right. I wouldn't necessarily say that.
All right.
I mean,
he didn't look like him. For one thing, like, I really think that like trying to make him look like the TV show version with the young kid, like, It took away all of the charm that he had with me.
But that's what he looked like when he first started.
I know. I'm not a typical reader, though, so I'm yeah.
They brought him back to his roots, which was what he looked like when he first was a superhero, which is a different, slightly different costume to mimic the TV version, which I don't have a problem with. It makes sense. He was a good character on TV. People liked him. You know, that's what they're trying to go for, but it comes down to execution, and execution was poor.
That's, yes.
All right. One last voicemail to get in. Well, I don't know what I was saying.
you said something in the other one. You made up a word, but that's fine.
Hey, guys. My name is Greg from Nashville. I was just wondering, what are your favorite Elseworld or alternate universe stories? You know, I started reading Age of Apocalypse years ago, and I loved it, and that's been my favorite for years. I was just wondering, you know, what's your favorite was? All right, thanks.
Listen to Josh get angry.
Exactly. That's my favorite.
That's not alternate reality. That's just now. I don't know.
See, Josh hates alternate universe stories, and Ron and I love
them.
That's not true. I just don't care. I just think of stories.
Yeah,
I just don't catalog them that way in my head, so I can't ever think of an answer to the question. Yeah. That's – I'm mad at myself.
Yeah, really, you should be.
I would take alternate universe stories all day long.
Yes. Oh,
no,
I could.
And I'm totally fine with that too. Marvel Zombies.
There you go. See, was that so hard?
First one. You shut your hole. My favorite alternate stories is everything that took place in D.C. before July.
Kingdom Come, Dark Knight Returns. You know, those are two of the sort of apex alternate stories in the DC side. You mentioned Age of Apocalypse is probably one of the
Avengers Forever.
Marvel doesn't do them as often.
Yeah,
Avengers Prime almost was.
Well, hang on. Marvel doesn't do it so often. I mean, you have the entire run of What If. Which is to me like the, you know, what if, you know, what if the, you know, what if the, I don't even know, what if Daredevil became the Punisher, what if, you know, what if Phoenix had lived, what if Spider-Man had joined the Fantastic Four, what if there's so many great stories,
what if there's some kind of panties I never even thought of.
No, those are great, but they haven't done them in a while.
They haven't.
And when they do them, it's what if that book we put out last week?
That's the big problem with what if. I would read the hell out of a classic. The late 80s, early 90s what ifs were the best. They were just so good. And that's why.
It was to show why the choices you make are important and why, you know, these things that happen have a resonance, not what if this just ended differently.
Yep. Exactly.
What if we could sell you a book that did this?
Yep.
What if we could spin that off into its own series? That's the question they're actually asking.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well. Yeah,
New Frontier. New Frontier is my favorite alternate.
There you go.
Story. All right, cool.
Red
Sun is good. Oh yes, there's so many. There. Excalibur did a whole bunch of stuff with that back in the day.
What was that X-Men book that Judd Winnick did?
Exiles was a whole series about it. Yeah, that was great. Yeah,
and I never read it, but someone.
Well,
must
that tied
have
deeply
it.
Into Age of Apocalypse because Blink was in it and all stuff like that. But anyway. So if you have any questions, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. Be sure to tune in to iFanboy Don't Miss, one of our companion podcasts, which comes out every Monday, where we highlight a book that's coming out this week that you absolutely can't miss. And we talked to a creator about it. And this week I spoke to Brandon Graham about Prophet number 21, the return of the extreme line of books from Image. And Brandon Graham and Simon Roy are doing Prophet number 21. I've read it, and it is not what you expect. And it was kind of awesome. So tune in to hear Brandon Graham of King City fame to talk about writing that book. And you can get that on iTunes and on ifanboy.com on Monday.
Cool. You can also listen to the Make Comics podcast, which I am doing with Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience, where we take 10, 12 minutes to talk about a topic germane to producers of comics in the early stages, whether you want to write or draw comics. We're trying to cover those bases. If you want to make comics, some craft stuff in there, but also sort of how to deal with a business and break in. Really enjoying doing those shows, and I've loved hearing the feedback from them. I feel like I'm doing something helpful.
Cool.
Feel good about it.
Yeah, they've been good.
Yep, they're fun.
You can find that on Wednesdays, and check out ifanboy.com for Ron's Pick of the Week review. One day you'll get his Book of the Month review.
Monday you will.
Before the month is out, you'll get
tomorrow
it.
Tomorrow you will, yeah. So
all the in-depth
but
discussion.
You're giving me a false sense of time, though. I'm going to be like, well, he's done. Now I go, oh, I only got 3 days.
Ah, that's why I do it.
Every day we got news stories, we got opinion pieces, we got articles, we got fun stuff, we got serious stuff, we got all kinds of stuff. If you like comics, you can be at ifanboy.com, check it out. And every Monday there's the pull list. You can go to ifanboy.com/about and to see our staff list and our social media list. You can become our friend, find us through there. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy. And we do a video show. What video show? We don't do a video show. Do we do a video show? I don't know.
I keep sending emails, but nobody responds to them.
I'm out of pancake makeup.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Keep them short. Keep them to 30 seconds. Let us know who you are, where you're from. Always good to hear from you. Call me.
Do you like iTunes reviews? If you like our shows, the things we do, leave iTunes reviews and be honest. It's fine. Yeah. Or any other podcast. That's just a great way to if you like this wonderful free media that you're experiencing, you should help propagate it, because that will help everybody. A rising tide, all boats and whatnot. Or just tell people about it. Link them up on websites. You hear a good show. Spread the word. Use your social networking power to do so. And we thank you very much for that.
Cool. All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I am Josh. Thanks very much, everyone.